Welcome to Fresh Take, where we at Florida Organic Growers speak to food systems experts about topics related to organic and sustainable agriculture, healthy lifestyles, and the environment. To help us continue our programs at FOG, including our podcast, consider becoming a sponsor. For more information on sponsorship, check out our Get Involved page on our website, www.foginfo.org.
Welcome, everyone, to our latest Fresh Take episode. Today, we're very excited and happy to be talking to one of our own, Logan Petrie, who is the chair of Florida Organic Growers Board. Will be talking to us about organic practices, organic transitioning, and just excited to get started. Hi, Logan.
Hi, Juan. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here, and this topic is really important, and I've been passionate about talking about it, so thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely. I guess we should just get started with finding out a little bit more about you. You've been part of the board now for some time, but we wanted to know maybe a little bit about your background, how it was that you got started in organic and even just with us here at FOG. So anything you want to share with us, you know, please tell us what made you want to be an organic farmer and be involved with FOG.
Yeah. So I grew up on a family farm. It was mostly produce farm. This was conventional. Really wasn't exposed to organics until my master's program at University of Georgia. I was in the MPPM program, which is really the agronomist position. There were some lessons on organics, not much. It really wasn't terribly popular. And then once I got out, graduated, I became an agronomist for Generation Farms, which is in Lake Park, Georgia. Our main crop was carrots, and we also had other rotational crops, but we also had an organic program with, again, the main focus on carrots, and the organic farm manager position came open, and I took it. So I left the agronomy spot. I left the, I guess I never leave the agronomy spot as a farmer, a special organic farmer, but so I did really solely focus on organics and building that program. So it was definitely a challenge. We didn't have a lot of things established. There was not many big, you know, large farms in the North Florida, South Georgia area doing organic. So a lot of it, we kind of had to pioneer. And then I was at the FOG, Florida Organic Growers Summit, and I think it was 2017. And it was an open invitation for board members, and I filled an application and I got on. So I've been on since 2018.
Cool. And it's been just, you know, a delight to have you, you know. In fact, the part of the, I guess, the idea to create the Fresh Take podcast came from the board, people like you, who really saw the need to communicate with, you know, our, you know, farmers and everybody who, you know, supports what we do through this venue. So it's been really a delight to, over the years, talk to you about various topics. And in particular, this topic that we'll be talking about today, the organic transition and the opportunities that with the USDA Transition to Organic Partnership Program, of which Florida Organic Growers is the lead. We are in charge of managing 7 states, including Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Louisiana, and the 2 territories, Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. And really part of the goal over the next 5 years is to support those producers who are interested in transitioning practices, their practices to organic practices. If that means that they will consider at some point become certified organic, that's great. But really what we're trying to do through the project is to, one, if people are interested in talking to or receiving mentorship from experienced organic farmers, that's something that we will be doing through TOP. Once again, the Transition to Organic Partnership Program, as we call it, provide technical assistance and training for people interested in organic practices. Something that is very, very important is community building and community development. We're going to be working with various partners throughout these 7 states and the 2 territories. So not only is FOG creating and building new relationships or strengthening those relationships that exist, but also among all of these partners, close to almost 30 right now, really have that sense of community, both with the organizations and obviously our target audience, which are the farmers and the producers. We'll be collecting some data, of course, which is always very, very important in terms of, you know, what, how we're really making an impact in these communities, and hopefully also creating and developing a workforce. There is really a need in the organic industry right now for more people to be involved, either as, you know, organic inspectors, for example, obviously, you know, more farmers, specialists, you know, your experience as an agronomist, you can understand how important this is. So this is a huge and very, very important project for all of us. We're very happy to have people like you who have a lot of expertise and experience share with us how you see the transition to organic partnership program, you know, sort of impact, especially in the Southeast, how you think farmers can really benefit from this program.
Thank you. Yes. So I think being in organics, the idea of transitioning a lot of acres, we organic farmers can definitely see that there are going to be challenges to that. I'm glad. I hope that it's exciting for other farmers to, you know, to get in and start this way. But there are going to be some of those challenges. Now, the community, building community for farmers is important because farmers have always had a strong community. It's being together at the, you know, local ag store or, you know, the farm supply stores and meeting in the mornings and talking about, you know, what everybody's doing and what things are working. And so community development is needed even for organic farmers. And that's harder to come by because there are less farmers, you know, in your area for that. So having it, whether it's, you know, now virtual, however that is, to be able for farmers to talk to each other, because there's just a type of language, there's a type of experience that you can only get by being the farmer. And so I think that that is extremely important. Also, to even on the community side, like talking about the farm supply stores, and it is hard to be the only organic farmer around and have somebody order inputs in bulk, you know, at better prices. When you're very small acres or you're a very small farmer, you know, that can be very challenging when there's nobody else around using that material. And it's hard for the farm supply, for example, to hold that inventory. And maybe it's something you're even trialing. So having a community is going to help in that. It's also going to help, yeah, build the fertilizer storage places or where they actually can manufacture some of those fertilizers, like cooking chicken litter, for example, farmers market. So the community is very strong and it reduces a lot of the freight. It reduces, you know, the things that you may have to rely on otherwise. What's also necessary is the infrastructure. And so on the conventional side, you know, there are gins for, there's cotton, there's places for drying points for peanuts. There's also drying points for corn. And we don't have that for organics. And so that, or at least in this area. And so if we could build that, if we could somehow support those through this, then that would open up a lot of opportunities for growers.
Yeah, that's for sure. Some of the things that we're hoping we will be able to do in the next 5 years is sort of identify those needs, the challenges that we face, really do, you know, make a conscious effort, very intentional in developing that infrastructure and trying to identify, you know, where the needs exist and how we can properly address them is very, very important. One of the things that I want to sort of point out, and for everybody that's listening, that this is at no cost to the people interested in the program. People can contact FOG. They can contact the partners throughout various states that, you know, we will be providing information on who those folks are. But there's no cost in providing the technical assistance. And we're hoping that we can also expose people to some of the other programs, USDA programs that can benefit, you know, farmers, and it can meet those sort of needs sometimes, especially whether it be financial support, technical assistance, and the like. What are some of the, maybe you as an organic farmer, success stories or things that you have experienced by being an organic farmer?
So where we found the most consistent success is when we have a double cropping system with good rotations. So I'm not talking about doing a carrot crop after a carrot crop. I'm talking about following with something that complements it to where you're reducing soil pathogen problems. You're reducing a lot of those issues that build up on the soil over time. But when you have that double cropping system, what happens is you may weed the cash crop like carrots. You can spend more money on hand weeding, let's say, where you can't really spend that in the grain corn. You don't have the margins to do so. But if you're following a clean ground, you can put in corn behind it and it is clean. And also you're using a lot of the residual fertilizers that otherwise would leach, because these are slow release fertilizers. And so that takes time to break down, and that next crop will benefit from that. And so that's when you start seeing your inputs gradually potentially decreasing in each season. But if you don't follow that, then some of that does become a waste. And so that's where we've seen our most consistent success. So developing those crop rotations, trying to be pretty tight on them is, it will help you at least add some insurance there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things that I always tell people, and then over the years, I think, you know, I myself, you know, like you, similar to you as an agronomist, and just having been trained in more of a conventional, you know, systems approach to growing crops, just don't realize that sometimes we're really heavily relying on inputs to grow every season. So one thing that's very important about organic practices, it's that it's more of a whole, you know, systems approach. It's not input replacement necessarily, but it's about, you know, using these things, conservation practices, like, you know, like crop rotations, cover crops, you know, IPM, and many other things that, you know, are tools for every farmer, any type of farmer. But one of the things that, as you said, that, you know, is hopefully going to change over time if you really apply these practices, is that even just, you know, the use and the need to use more inputs will be reduced, or at least we hope that that's going to be the case. What are some, but, you know, speaking of, you know, successes, but what are some of the things that you would say, you know, farmers, especially those farmers that are just getting started, should be, you know, mindful or just watch in terms of things that could fail or things that you could, you know, could go wrong as you're getting started as an organic farmer or even as established organic farmer?
Yep. So where we've really messed up is when we push the windows, like planting windows, for example. You really, if you're an organic farmer, you need to stay within the sensible planting window. You don't need to go on the inside or outside of that, just because it isn't an input based approach, right? So you don't have rescue items. You don't have the fertilizers that react quickly to green it up after a terrible cold, or you don't have the really efficacious fungicides that can help you out when disease comes too early. So planting in the more traditional windows is best. Also, you need to be preventative. And so when I mean preventative, a good fertilizer program is important, because a stressed crop, a weak crop, really invites diseases and insects. And there's a lot of research on that. You know, a weaker plant is going to attract those things, and it's harder to combat that. So if you can stay ahead, and what is hard with the fertilizer deal, because you're working with slow release fertilizer, so there's release curves, and it takes some work, but it's best just to make sure that you have it out there, and then slowly over time, if you can reduce, and that's good. But to keep your crop strong, fertility is very important.
For sure. And fertility, it's one of those things that, as you said, it's very challenging. I think that the mindset of, you know, you have these recommendations that have existed for, you know, God knows how long for farmers in different, you know, parts of the country, in different areas, but that we keep in mind that we're not feeding the plants, we're feeding the soil. So this is where all these practices become very, very important, because you can hopefully by those practices retain a lot of those nutrients in the soil and not always think that you need to, you know, just think that you're going to be applying these many pounds of fertilizer every season. If you're doing the, you know, the job right, that may not be necessary. And so this is another part of what we're really hoping to instill in a lot of our farmers, and as people getting, you know, sort of used to using organic farming practices as opposed to, you know, the conventional traditional forms of growing. What are some of, and speaking of that, because we're talking about fertility and you mentioned also insect and disease pressure when, you know, the plants are more susceptible. What are some, would you say, of the other challenges, greatest challenges that organic farmers face?
So with organics, you do want to maintain that crop rotation. And sometimes, you know, just having cover crops can be costly. And so you want to have cash crops, you want to bring in more revenue. And so finding those markets and the infrastructure to support that is a challenge. And so, you know, for mostly rotational crops, also what we have found is that varieties that you rely on the conventional side, I mean, they do very well on the conventional side, but they actually are pretty susceptible to foliar diseases. And so where you don't have the, you know, really efficacious fungicides to protect you, it really exposes a lot of the genetic potential of variety. So that has been kind of difficult too. We've seen that a lot in our carrots, for example. So yeah, so that there are challenges, and also populations. We have found that pushing the population to be too high reduces airflow, which really stresses the crop. So you just got to be more of a more moderate thinking farmer.
Right. Yeah. So with that, I'd like to maybe, and you've already have given us a lot of, you know, really good tips, a lot of, you know, good recommendations, but I want to expand a little bit on for those conventional farmers that are listening, and perhaps even somebody who's just getting started in using and adopting more organic farming practices. What are some of the things that farmers should be considering when it comes to transitioning their acreage to organic?
Sure. So I do want to state in the beginning that if you plan to cheat or be non-compliant, that organics is not for you. It is not sustainable. You need the whole system to work well to last, and it thankfully works that way. We organic farmers work very hard, and fraud really hurts us very much. So I do state that up front. But let's say you do want to transition. I think educating yourself on the rules, you need to do that, and also to train anybody on the farm that may be handling your product just to prevent any of the non-compliant issues. And FOG will help you with that. There's a lot of material that's easy to read that you can source and help yourself along in that transitional period. When you ask yourselves, what do you want to convert? I hear this from farmers a lot. They'll say, well, we can convert that piece of ground there. I barely use it, and we're not using it right now. And typically the reason why it's not being used is because it's not good ground. And I do not recommend going that route.
Yeah.
If you are putting in a lot of inputs on organic side, they cost twice as much, you know, typically. So I recommend your stronger ground, and that may be financially hard to do, but long term, that is going to be the best option because you want it to be well drained. You want it to have lesser weeds. You want these things in your organic ground. The challenges are hard enough. So I would recommend your better ground. And then during that transitional period, farmers are thinking, well, what am I going to do during that transitional period? And this may differ within the regions or the crops available, but I have found it to be best to not grow something organically and sell it conventionally. The numbers just do not work out. So you're, especially during that transition period, because it takes some time for that soil to mellow out. You're working with ground that's been sterilized with fumigants. You're working with ground that hasn't had soil building in it. And when you put an organic crop in it, it's not going to do well. And so I recommend doing covers and building the soil, leaving it out. Do not let it go fallow because weeds will build up, but building it up with cover crops. Now, to understand the 3 years is important because in the handbook, it says the 3 years from your last application to harvest. So you can grow a crop in the last, you know, couple months, whatever the growing takes. So if you're a peanut farmer and you make your last application in August, and then you harvest it, you know, a couple months later, that August application is your date of starting transition. And so then you can plant, you know, 2-3 years later on that third year, you can plant corn in the spring prior to your 3-year date, but as long as you harvest it the day after, for example. So
correct. That's correct. Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because a lot of things that we're hoping that we're going to be able to clarify for producers and people who are considering transition is that they don't have to wait 3 full years to get started. They can start now, you know, as you were mentioning, you know, that last application of, you know, whatever input is prohibited under the organic regulations is your starting date. And then you can actually plan, if you plan, you know, well, to in your third year, when that date comes into effect, to be harvesting, as you said, when that date comes into effect, harvest and then be able to sell that crop as organic, and even started the process with, you know, certifiers and certification agencies who can help you with, you know, getting to that point. So and so you're talking about the market, you're talking about some of those ideas. You mentioned that, you know, leaving the land fallow, which I completely agree. It's very, very important not to leave the soil bare. We have to protect the soil. As we said, this is a whole systems approach. Soil is, as we know, is the basis and the important, you know, most important piece of farming. So we want to maintain that soil. And in fact, it's written into the regulation. What about some of the other things? And of course, you've already discussed a little bit about crop rotations, but some of the other things and recommendations that you see really have worked well for you.
Sure. So yeah, crop rotations, you want to make sure that it's, you're not just rotating different types. Like I've heard beans and peas and then soybeans and then and clover. So those are all within the same family. And so you really need to look at different crop families just to build up, because those all, you know, can have the same crop pests in the soil, pathogens like that. So trying to rotate crop families are within your system. And if you building that with cash crops is great and it takes time, but until then you can rotate with cover crops that are of different crop families. So the grass family is extremely common. The legume family is very common, but there's also the brassica family that is starting to become more popular, which is good. You've got some hot mustards that work well, radishes that help with soil compaction. So I actually recommend the book Managing Cover Crops Profitability.
Okay.
That book is great. It shows the kind of the price points, the benefits of each time, the seeding dates. And so it has a lot of information for that you can use. And, you know, during that transitional period, if the opportunity there is to have hay for a local cattle farmer or dairy or something like that, you can take that opportunity and do it. But, and so you can, again, the profitability, maybe there's some opportunities there for cover crops, but do maintain in that transition period, your crop rotation as well with covers.
Yeah, excellent. And one of the things that I think we've discussed, and as I was mentioning, the 5 key areas of the Transition to Organic Partnership Program is that we hope to be able to, people listening, and as we have just started the project and we need in year one, but establishing our farmer-to-farmer mentorship program, which would allow, you know, beginning farmers, or people who just don't have the experience to talk to experienced farmers and those farmers be mentors to them in terms of, you know, some of the things that you've been discussing, of course, but also just in general, some of the, you know, what has helped them the most when you know, they've been part of this organic community. So I think that that's going to be one of the great things about, you know, TOP, the Transition to Organic Partnership Program, once again, is that we will be able to connect farmers with other farmers and more experienced farmers and serve, you know, as farmers. Because farmers are usually sort of the very reliable source of information for other farmers, because they're the ones who really also have experienced the challenges and struggles that the farmers, you know, face. So I think that that's also very important.
It is. And, you know, one thing to mention on that is FOG is going to be doing the Grower Summit again. And that is another great opportunity to meet farmers. You know, if you're interested in getting organic farming, go to the summit, be exposed to some of those educational sessions that they're going to be having, some vendors there, but also the farmers, meet them and talk with them.
And that's and I'm glad that you mentioned that, Logan, because yes, in 2024 the Organic Summit is coming back. So, you know, please stay posted. We'll continue to update you on, you know, the summit when that's happening in 2024. One of the things that I also sort of wanted to get your input on in terms of your own experience, what do you really see the organic industry and their role in agriculture here in the US?
Well, organic agriculture is now a 67 and counting billion dollar industry. So it is significant in our in agriculture. So it's catching the eyes of people, which is good, you know, as far, and especially with legislators, with politicians, and seeing that. I know the Biden administration just, you know, has the OTI and the top programs wanting to move that. They've stated that Vilsack stated that it's climate smart agriculture, you know, so there's a lot of movement going towards that, you know, picking up the popularity of organics. And so it does have a role. And even, you know, even though they're not necessarily studies to say it's healthier, that people like the option of having food that isn't treated with a lot of pesticides or doesn't have a lot of pesticide residuals on it. They like the option, or it doesn't have a lot of synthetic additives into things. You know, if people are diagnosed with cancer, they're going to be super safe. And I've heard a lot, you know, they're going to choose organic. And so we need to continue to provide that avenue for people.
Yeah. And that, I'm glad that, you know, we're speaking of just giving consumers and even the farmers options if they feel that, you know, conventionally farming systems and using pesticides, for instance, and using synthetic fertilizers is either too costly, it's not really something that they like doing, then, you know, organic does give them that option that you are not, because you require to not use those substances. It does give you that opportunity to and that option to do so. And then, of course, there's the market. I mean, as you just mentioned, the market continues to grow. There's more and more people, for various reasons, looking for that alternative or buying, you know, organic products, organic food. So farmers who are sort of considering this to increase, you know, farm revenue, this is an opportunity. And then one of the things that obviously we hope to be able to do is to continue to inform people about these new markets and opportunities through, you know, the various, you know, things that we do here at FOG. So what about in terms of, and I was just touching on that, in terms of that, you know, farm revenue, in your experience, what are some of the things that you've seen?
Sure. So, you know, this is an interesting point too, is adding organics to your portfolio is, it can benefit your conventional sales as well. So you may have a broker or a sales company that wants to stop at your packing shed, for example. Let's say if you have broccoli and you have organic broccoli, and they're more likely maybe to pay you more for the conventional because you have some organic on, or stop at your shed when you're full because you have organic. So it can help you move product, which is good. And it's good, you know, also to have that conventional too, because sometimes it's hard to move a lot of organic products. So having that, whether you're partnering or you're sharing a shed with a conventional farmer, or you're a conventional farmer yourself, y'all can benefit each other in that. So yeah, so it does add to the portfolio. And the organic prices do not always, sometimes they do, but do not always mirror the conventional sales fluctuations. And so you might have something that's a little more consistent for you. When certain things tank, organics may, you know, stay the same. And so I've seen that as well. So just having maybe something that's a little more consistent or on contract, something like that.
Yeah. Well, Logan, thank you so much for talking to us today. I think we've gotten some really good ideas, tips, recommendations, and hopefully everyone listening and those that are considering, you know, those farmers that are considering adopting more organic farming practices and maybe even just, you know, becoming a certified organic producer can benefit. And I know they will benefit from some of the information that you've shared with us today. We really appreciate, you know, talking to you.
Great. I hope so. That was the purpose. And it's always, always great to be here. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Logan. And to everyone listening, please stay tuned. We will continue to provide more information about the Transition to Organic Partnership Program TOP. Please visit our website, www.foginfo.org, for more information about the TOP program, but all of the other projects and programs that, you know, we hope can benefit farmers and consumers and everyone else. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Florida Organic Growers is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. So to keep our content available and free to the public, we need your help. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen, and consider making a tax-deductible donation or become a sponsor. Learn more about our work and how you can become a sponsor from our website, www.foginfo.org.